Welcome to another Directions Magazine podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. I'm speaking today with Barbara Ryan, Secretariat Director of the Intergovernmental Group on Earth Observations in Geneva, Switzerland. Today, the Group on Earth Observations has an expansive mission to provide information about Earth science and technology for policymakers worldwide. GEO's members include 92 governments and the European Commission, plus 67 intergovernmental agencies. Projects range from the Asian Water Cycle Initiative to global drought early warning to biomass monitoring. After graduating from the State University of New York at Cortland with a degree in geology in 1974, Ms. Ryan joined the United States Geological Survey and became the Associate Director for Geography at the USGS, where she was responsible for the agency's remote sensing, geography, and civilian mapping programs, including the Landsat satellites. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoy the interview.
Thanks, Barbara. I really appreciate you taking the time to have this interview. So my first question is that the Group on Earth Observations, GEO, appears to be a coordinating body of Earth Observation societies. So tell me if that's an accurate description, and what do you think are the most concrete deliverables from the group that they can offer to policymakers and especially those in the developing world?
Well, thank you very much, Joe. Yes, I think that is by and large an accurate characterization of the organization. We are an intergovernmental organization, so it does have, actually we've got 92 governments. Right now, since I last saw you a couple weeks ago, Bulgaria has come in as our 92nd member. But we also have a membership category for participating organizations. So it's those scientific and technical organizations, or societies, as you called it, who are also eligible to join GEO. Now, these could be UN organizations. They could be, again, scientific associations, not-for-profits that can join GEO. And then, of course, we're broadening our mandate to include private sector entities as well. But our primary function is to ensure that Earth observations writ large, whether they're collected from space, you know, by satellites, whether they're collected on the Earth's surface, in the oceans or on land or in the atmosphere, Earth observations writ large are integrated and then applied to society's greatest challenges. So that's our primary function. And so if we go back to the role of those maybe geospatial or scientific associations or societies, as you call it, they already do a fair amount of coordination in selected domains, like WMO for the weather domain. We want to leverage that integration and coordination that they're already doing and make sure that policymakers, citizens, decision makers in other areas who may not know that data exists, we want to make sure it's discoverable and accessible.
So I was looking at the 10-year implementation plan, and as you had said, or as it says on the website, it's to summarize essential steps to be undertaken over the next decade by the global community of nations and, as you said, the intergovernmental organizations. What I'm curious about is, so what does this look like in 10 years? What should it look like if the 10-year plan was successful?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it is really imagining or envisioning a future that I think we do not have anywhere on the globe right now. And so how I would see it unfolding is that a citizen or a policymaker, let's just say a decision maker, whether you're making a decision what you're going to wear today, like you do every day, or whether you're going to take an umbrella, like you do in the weather domain. But let's think about it from a decision maker's perspective. You've got a question. You'd like to know the answer, or at least some estimates of what you think will happen. You'd like to get a prognosis. And you're able to go in and pose a question, and then within the background, you'd have the information, one, either already integrated that would help answer that question, models that could be generated that would already have posed the question and give you some alternate scenarios or alternate futures, and whether it's and the fact that it takes data from many different sources, different spatial data, different temporal data, different discipline-based data, and right now that data management challenge, I don't think we've addressed that anywhere really well globally. Now, I don't think it can be done in 10 years, okay? But if our moving in that direction so that people are starting to discover and then access the data that they think they need to make, you know, to make that decision, that will start, that'll put a nice forcing function on the system to keep moving in that direction. So let me add one more thing, because I actually forgot the second part of your previous question, which is what's one of the greatest accomplishments of the group on Earth observations, maybe out of the first 8 or 9 years, our first 10-year history, is advocacy for broad open data policies. And I think I know of no other organization that is advocating for broad open data policies across all the domains in which we work. Clearly, some countries have adopted and are advocating for broad open data policies of government data. Some organizations are advocating for that within the domains for which they are interested. But I don't know of any organization other than GEO, the Group on Earth Observations, that's saying if governments are collecting data at taxpayer expense for Earth observations, satellites, stream gauges, weather sensors, that the products of those systems, which is the data, needs to be broadly released. And I think we've gotten some wonderful examples where strides have been made because of the Group on Earth Observations, and we just need to continue pushing in that direction.
So given all of the Earth observation possibilities, both from satellites or any type of global monitoring network of Earth-based ground-truthing the satellite data, how do you think that all of this comes together? Is this going to be published out in a portal, or is it going to be available for download from one central repository? I know that GEO has a portal now up on its website, but I'm curious as to know how all of this sensor information gets pushed to those who need it.
You're right. We have a website. We have a portal where you can go in and do a search on whether it's geography or whether it's theme, whether it's organization, whether it's time frame. So there are a lot of different parameters for which you can go in and search for data. But the data does not come into GEO. It stays resident with the technical experts, with those organizations that have responsibility for providing quality assurance and quality control, responsibility for developing metadata so that you can know information about the data, those organizations that are responsible for archiving the data. So what our primary contribution is a discovery and access broker. We happen to call it a DAB, a discovery and access broker, and it's an interoperability agreement that we establish with organizations who are willing to release their data broadly, openly, to the world at large. Now, some organizations may have a registration process, because essentially what we do is through our portal, if we've established interoperability agreements with these organizations, that makes their discoverable and accessible, but the user actually, although they come into our website and portal, the user is actually pulsing or tapping into the home institution, the organization that has the data. And so we don't envision a gigantic data repository of all this data. We envision that it is really just an ecosystem, a spider diagram where we're out pulsing these data sets when we get a query for data along those lines. Now, if you go to the next step and say, okay, well, how are you going to create the models and the diagnostic tools that would start answering the questions, you know, that we talked about a few minutes ago, envisioning what this is going to look like in 10 years, I see those as just services that are also accessible. And when you think about, well, who designs these services, it can be anybody. It can be other government agencies. It can be the private sector. It can be universities. It can be anybody who's thinking about these issues and those questions that are being posed so that they come in and can start building the models and tools to answer those questions. So in many ways, it's almost like an intelligent, an intelligent kind of virtual infrastructure, if there is such a thing.
Now, so do you envision that the contributing organizations will conform to a certain web service protocol? I know the OGC is a member of GEO. Do you encourage them to follow the OGC web feature services?
Yeah, we do. OGC is a key partner, and they are a participating organization in the group on Earth Observations. And so many of the member countries, many of our participating organizations, and then, of course, the private sector contributes as well. So OGC is absolutely a key driver in this entire system. Now, that's not to say that and I'm probably not the person to talk about it, but it's possible, I imagine, that we may have an interoperability agreement with an organization who may not necessarily comply to all the OGC standards. I can't name an example right now, but the possibility may exist. I'd have to talk to our interoperability guys about that. But clearly, we are advocating more harmonization across organizations of these interoperability mechanisms. But let me say this: we are not mandating that organizations would have to rewrite metadata to our standards. We tried that for the first 6 years, and it failed. Okay.
Yeah.
So as soon as we transitioned away from getting other partners to conform to our metadata, and said, you know what, you've got your own metadata, let's come up with this interoperability agreement that can be a translator of your metadata into our formats. I think that's maybe the best way to characterize it. Oh, my goodness. Then it was a logarithmic take-up of data that's discoverable and accessible through the portal now. More than 70 million resources now, and I think after a couple years of us trying to get everybody to register their data in our metadata standards, I think we have something like 300 resources, and that's after like 4 or 5 years of work. And now in a couple of years since we got the interoperability broker, it's up to 70 million.
Let me switch gears just briefly, because I was just really impressed with the book that you were distributing while at the ESRI User Conference, The Report on Progress. So many projects, so many really important endeavors going on. How do you prioritize these projects?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joe, because I think the simple answer is not very well. we are a voluntary organization, and so any organization that comes in, takes a look at our work plan, thinks they can make a contribution to a particular area, we largely accept. And that's, I think, been a strength, because it has been very inclusive, making it a good place, a collaborative work environment for people to come in and work. But when you are trying to ensure that policymakers, political people that don't really understand this domain very well, you need of coherent stories to tell. And
right.
That requires more prioritization. So as we go into the next decade, I think what we will see is, I do not think we will deviate from our core principles, which are a voluntary organization to accept contributions programmatically or financially from organizations that want to work together. But what we are encouraging is that each of these projects look for what the true policy mandate is for that work, because we're arguing that until you get a policy mandate, a global policy mandate, you're probably not going to get the attention of real senior, global senior leaders around the world. So we've got a handful, 4 or 5 global initiatives. One is called GEOGLAM, the Group on Earth Observations Global Agricultural Monitoring Initiative. We got a policy mandate from the G20 agricultural ministers to continue to build GEOGLAM, work with AMIS, the agricultural marketing information people, so that we can bring Earth observations together to do a better job of forecasting production estimates for the 4 major food crops, bring those production crop yields, production forecasts to AMIS, who assigns a market value, and if you could bring more stability to pricing, that will have a tremendous effect on global food security. So we're trying to encourage all of our 26 tasks, 90 different components, to start thinking about a much broader policy mandate, and we would like to prioritize our activities to those projects that have identified and worked on confirming that policy mandate.
Barbara, just one final question, and I hope you can address this one. There seems to have been an explosion of new Earth observation satellites going up, Skybox, EarthCast, Planet IQ. How do you think this new crop of Earth observation systems will impact science and technology policy over the next few years, and how will your organization react to all of this new data?
Yeah, that's another really good question, Joe, because I think it will be mixed. There will be some very, very positive come out of it, access to different kinds of data, more data in certain areas, higher resolution data. But one of the challenges will be as that, I understand the business model right now, if it continues to be on selling the data as compared to selling value-added products and services, then I think it could harm some of the existing government or public domain ventures for Earth observations because of the financial pressures. Now, some will argue that's not a problem because it ought to go to the lowest bidder or, you know, the one that can deliver the highest quality service in the shortest amount of time. But what you want to ensure is that their sustainability of these observing systems out into the future. And so that's why much of the rhetoric that you will hear is that it hasn't been perfect, but is it a public function to ensure long-term continuity of these observing systems, regardless of who's actually collecting the data or doing the data? So I would just hate to erode a public sector responsibility with some really good successes that are coming out of the private sector. So for me, it's more let's always remember our roles and responsibilities about, regardless of who does the work, let's remember the roles and responsibilities for the public good, and that's what I would like to make sure gets protected into the future. So for me, it doesn't always have to be the government providing it, but the government needs to assure the citizens that they're in the game and will provide it, even if they're buying those products and services and or data from the private sector.
Well, Barbara, thanks very much for your time. I don't want to take up too much more, but I really appreciate us making the connection because these are some really key issues, and Earth Observation has really got a spotlight on it right now. So, again, thanks very much for your time.
Well, don't mention it, Joe. And listen, if we can provide any information, boy, by all means, just give me a call. We've enjoyed it too, okay?
Okay, very well.
Thanks again for joining me on another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment about my interview today with Barbara Ryan, please write to me at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.